Hello, everyone. This is Gregory Proctor. Welcome to another episode of Cut to the Chase, Episode 12, Organizational, Cultural, and Behavior. Today, we will be talking about organizational culture and behavior, which basically refers to a system of shared assumptions, values, and beliefs that shows how employees appropriately and inappropriately behave in organizations. As we all know, culture right now, not only what's going on in society, but also an organization is being adversely affected by how employees think and how they behave culturally. So today, I have a good friend of mine, a colleague, an entrepreneur, someone that I have so much faith and confidence and trust in. We've known each other for so many years. His name is Dr. Frank Larkey. And to talk a little bit about Dr. Frank Larkey, we find that basically he's an innovator. He's a strategic thinker. He takes on an entrepreneurial approach to design and engineer successful organizational cultural changes, initiatives centered on morale development. He utilizes his expertise in executive leadership, team coaching, methodology design. He also provides consultancy and collaborative cultural leadership services and analysis in a wide variety of Fortune 500 companies and also nonprofit. Frank has so many accolades that, you know, I sometimes just want to reach out and give him a big hug because he's also been very much kind of like a father figure to me. So beyond what I've talked about, Frank is also the president of Loki International, and he's a managing director of Endeavor in Thailand. He's also a developmental psychologist and senior cultural architect. He's an adjunct professor of the faculty at the Houston Baptist Business School. Frank holds a Bachelor's of Science from the University of Houston, a Master's of Art from the University of Houston, a Doctorate of Philosophy and Development Psychology from the University of Houston. Frank, you know, with everything that you've got going on here, buddy, I have to tell you that for our audience, I just want to say, outside of his entrepreneurial professional beliefs and focus, Frank drives organizational cultures and values, beliefs and assumptions and behaviors directly to support the overall strategic goals. Frank, do you have any opening remarks? I don't know if I did a good job trying to cover all the things that I know you have expertise in.
Well, I'm not sure if I can follow up on your discussion. It sounded like you were talking about somebody else, not me, but... Let me just say this, that I always tell people that today I have a one-string banjo, and that's culture. And I did not wake up one day and was that interested in culture, but it's been about a 20-year journey in which I started, as you mentioned, as a developmental psychologist, and I went into basically executive coaching, leadership work, and so forth. And that brought me opportunities to look at starting startup companies, and we were looking at culture before culture was a good word. And then after a period of time, working in the field of biopsychology, we moved more into change management, transformation, and so forth. And I came face to face with the issues of culture because I was working globally, and I was working in organizations and working with leadership teams. And so I came to it, and I'm a very strong believer that that for me, it's all about culture. That's my thing. That's what I talk about.
Yeah. So Frank, can you tell our listening audience with regards to, you know, organizational, cultural, and behavior? Like you said, you started some 20 years ago, but what was the driving instance there or circumstances that really led you towards culture? What was the attraction?
Well, there was problems, and we had a problem. I was consulting with a plant in Louisiana, and there was an issue, and I went in, and I had a practice which was kind of new, where we used basically cultural anthropology as a means to intervene into a situation where a large plant was not doing very well. And so we went in, and we did a cultural intervention, and lo and behold, not only did it work, but I found out that you could get a tremendous amount of positive enabling if the culture was aligned correctly and everybody was moving in the right direction. So that what sold me on it. And then I just continued to pick up more data as I work globally with different companies, because there's this wonderful interaction between geographic culture and organizational culture that makes it a kind of a complex and interesting problem to try to solve.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for sharing that with us. So as you very well know, Frank, and obviously through kind of our backstory, which I'll share with the audience here briefly, Frank and I met probably, I don't know, maybe what, 3 years ago, Frank, possibly 3.5 years ago on an LNG facility where Frank was actually coming in trying to basically help this LNG facility get their cultural alignment in order. And I knew the significance back then of how important it was to kind of get everybody aligned with regards to organizational culture and organization behavior and being able to treat people with respect. But Frank, from your perspective and your professional background and being a more of a subject matter expert in this, why does organizational culture matter? I mean, you know, if we look at how things are today in all of this craziness that's going on in the world and what companies are faced with remote working staff and so forth and so on, why is organizational culture so important? Why does it matter?
So there's a term out there that's been championed a little bit that culture eats strategy. And it's pretty much the case, the truth. And not only thinking about our own experience, but in general, we have to really understand that an organization is very much, you know, like an extended family. Humans are very socially oriented. How they perform depends very much on their social environment. And I think, as we mentioned, when we talk about organizational culture, we're talking about shared values, shared assumptions, shared beliefs. And what happens when you bring people together from different cultures, they typically do not share those things. And so we have to bring those together. And what happens is you end up with a lot of barriers to executing the strategy, not intentional. I mean, one of the things I want to say and make very clear is that, you know, there's not an ideal culture out there. There's not an ideal organizational culture. There's not a perfect way of running an organization. It's very dynamic. It always needs to change. But it really is about getting everybody aligned with the same set of values, same set of behavior, same set of beliefs. And that takes some work and some strong leadership and actually a very strong workforce to accomplish that.
So in your organization, Loki International, which I've been privy to, you know, kind of be a part of some of the teachings and some of the rollout of what you've talked about there. But could you share with our listeners why companies need cultural? You know, what are some of the things that you guys do with Loki International that kind of help cultivate that cultural in these organizations?
Well, we can talk about, you know, the couple characteristics that most people think and talk about in organizations. That's trust, accountability, results, performance, communication. If you do any sort of an assessment on any organization, you ask what's wrong with the company, you're always going to come up with three things. You're going to come up with leadership, you're going to come up with communication, and then you're going to come up with something regards they're not taking good care of us as employees. I mean, you can just predict that. And so, therefore, the solution has got to come from leadership. The solution has got to come in better communication and then instilling, embedding in the culture itself a belief in the values, the mission, and so forth of the organization. So it is, I mean, it's just a no-starter because today, particularly in the energy industry, but across many other industries, you just bring people together from so many different set of beliefs and values. Everything about, like you talk about, using an example about working at home. You know, some people are going to do very well working at home. Because they're workaholics already and they probably work harder at home. Other people find it more difficult because they're going to be distracted by other things and they may have a difficult time kind of relying on their schedule. So a culture has got to bring both of those together. I mean, typically a cultural intervention is not about a single solution. It really is about a complex solution where you select two or three variables that you look for a sweet spot, some sort of a systematic kind of solution. So it takes some time and it takes a lot of engagement, serious communication and engagement across the organization.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for sharing that with us. So you hit on a couple points, you know, where you have talked about a few examples of what we would consider to be strengths and obviously weaknesses. I mean, you mentioned leadership, you mentioned trust, you mentioned the fact that there may be just a kind of a distinction in the ranks with regards to the existing culture of an organization. So in your professional opinion, with regards to those things that I've mentioned, as far as leadership, distinction in the ranks, and trust, could you provide us with examples of where you've seen in the past where cultural is strong versus culture that is weak? Could you give us kind of a comparison of that?
Well, you know, because I'm a consultant, I come in usually with companies that aren't doing really well. I'm not usually called in for companies that are super succeeding. But typically it is about, you know, you have a couple other specialists talking about leadership, so I don't need to talk a lot about leadership, but I can mm-hmm. simply say that the issue is consultants that come in, they look for either a top-down solution leadership or bottom-up. You know, they want the rank and file to be able to get aligned on getting the job done, getting results, meeting deadlines, getting the projects finished, and so forth. So there's that one level, and then there's the top down. And what my experience has been, in general, with failures, and I let me put a little note in here, because I had a note I wanted to bring out, and that is, you know, one of the things that we have learned over 30 years of transformation is that transformations are very, very, very difficult, and there's a very high rate of failure. Very, very sure. difficult. And I just say one little tit about it. And the reason for that is because, you know, many times people look at a kind of like extension of change management, something that we're going to do. We're going to get this done and get it behind us. And once we get it behind us, it's all smooth sailing. But that just turns out not to be the case at all. It's continual change. It's continual dynamic change and so forth. And so you have to build into this this DNA, this capability of shifting and dealing with uncertainty and dealing with unpredictability. So what happens is, my experience has been in the organizations that have failed as far as transformations, it's usually at mid-management level. And the reason mm-hmm. this happens is that you have basically this middle group of managers and leaders that have to both respond to what the top down, what the leaders are saying, and they have to execute on it. But in all the time, they also have to answer to the workforce and getting the job done and getting the things out the door. So you have task orientation that has to get done, and then you have this vision they're trying to do. And they get in a very, very difficult place. And typically the issue is, it will take not 6 months, it will take 2 years, 3 years, a long period of time to actually do a transformation. And so what that means, there'll be leadership turnover, there'll be management turnover. I mean, it has to be deeply embedded in the culture to be able to continually change and continually to adapt to a situation. So rather than give you to specific failure rates, because there's a lot of failures out there, and I've worked on some of them, but the success rate has been when you have leadership and management and the workforce, typically a group of cultural champions that drive the values and continue to hold leadership accountable, continue to hold management accountable. Accountability is critical, not just for getting the widgets out the door, but individual accountability for being the very best kind of person you can be on the job, and having that personal accountability, which we find is very important. And of course, once you have accountability, people trust you. I don't talk as much about trust as, you know, company, about leadership lying or saying something that's not true or keeping the truth. That happens in organizations. But really, it comes down to individual accountability, that if people feel accountable and they're supported, they will tend to build a culture that is resilient and be able to survive unpredictable situations.
Okay. Very good. So you talk a little bit in your explanation there regarding the DNA, or as I would paraphrase, kind of the lifeline or the breath of the company. So as you were articulating that and describing the DNA, would you consider the DNA being, you know, the core aspect of the culture? Like you said earlier, they're all different types of race and cultural and other various things that would be associated with bringing forth a company. And as companies reach out and spread their wings globally, then there's a lot of more adversity or differences or challenges to try to bring everyone into a single melting pot. But as you related it to DNA, I thought kind of that explanation really, you know, struck a chord based on the fact of it's like a bloodline. It almost describes to me whether or not if you understand the composition of that and the makeup of it, you know, then you have a better successful means of being able to have, like you said, a very strong cultural type of organization that allows for you to flourish. Did I paraphrase that correctly, or am I way off?
No. You're right on target. In fact, I haven't mentioned yet, which is kind of a fundamental of cultural organizational work, is that when we talk about culture, I mean, most people that have looked at organizational culture are familiar with this kind of iceberg thing where, you know, if I walk into a GE or an Exxon or a hotel, I'm going to see artifacts of a culture. They maybe dress a certain way, they act a certain way, air conditioning turned a certain way. I mean, there's the paint a certain way. You see artifacts, just like when you walk into a person's home. And then you walk on and you're going to see values on the wall, and here's what we stand for, and so forth and so on. And that's like when you walk into a home and say, well, we do this, and you have an idea of what they believe in, what their life is about, who they are as people. But the reality is that what really drives culture is these hidden beliefs, hidden values, these things that are deeply embedded, just very much like a child. When a child grows up, first 4 or 5 years, they have embedded in them the culture. They're embedded in their family, their beliefs, and so forth. They're not really, that doesn't pop up in their mind all the time that this is the right thing to do. And so it's also true about culture that culture in organization is something that you have to probe, you have to explore, and people have to feel that they can be honest and transparent about how they believe a culture, if it's moving in the right direction, if the organization, because otherwise you end up with moral hypocrisy. And that's when you have people that work in organizations and they're constantly looking for a new location, a new place, a new place to operate. So I would just say this, when I think of an organizational culture, I do think of identity. I do think of a narrative. You know, what is the business for? What are they existing for? And looking at enlarging that, because when I go to work every day, I want to know that what I believe in my life, personal life, is something that's being reinforced in these 40 to 50 hours a week that I'm working, whether it's home or whether it's an off-site virtual working.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, very, very good. And obviously, I mean, the other takeaway that I'm listening to from your explanation is people are going to be more receptive and they'll be more willing when they're more engaged with the cultural aspect of an organization that kind of ties into their beliefs and their integrity, which, like you stated, it basically builds trust between the individual and the cultural, as well as the organization and the leadership. So wow, I mean, you know, I'm learning. Well, every time we talk, I'm always learning more and more about the importance of culture and how you see it. So, in ways that culture serves organizations, and this was one of the things when I first encountered you and we first started to actually have some dialogue. In ways that culture serves organizations, can it be used as a controlling mechanism, almost like a lever? I mean, in some aspects, what's your take on that?
So I would say, I'm going to say yes, with a very soft lever, very soft hand. In fact, one of the things that you know, we have discovered in working in culture is that, I mean, humans are humans. Right. And so the whole purpose of a culture, doesn't matter what you're talking about, whether it's geographic, whether it's can be a sports team culture, whatever it is, the point of it is because you have shared values, there's a sort of a compliance, there's an agreement, there's a certain kind of behavior that's acceptable and a certain kind of behavior that's not acceptable. So typically, we have to have processes and procedures and so forth in place to help to execute the change of a culture from X to Y. It cannot be done just through communication and by people talking and encouraging and so forth. There has to be some mechanism, process, and procedures that help to support people as they move along. I mean, the perfect thing I would say, it's just like if you want to learn piano lessons or learn how to play soccer or something like that. You have to have a set of rules and principles to start with. At some point in time, you will begin to master it to the point where it's your own and you love to do it. And at some point in time, that's when you become an expert, you lead it. So there's clearly very strict stages here. So when you move people through transformation, they're going to all be at different stages, different points in time. And so you need help with process and procedures and structure to help to facilitate moving in that shared direction. And the last thing I'll say is, this is why many people that work in culture talk about well-defined versus ill-defined culture. A well-defined culture is very tight. They're in agreement. You ask one and they all have the same answer. This is a very tight culture. They're going to accomplish things. Risk with that is sometimes, like any model, may not be generalizable to risk situations. On the other hand, you can have a culture that's very wide, not very well defined. They're going to struggle in most situations. Sometimes in a very ambiguous situation, they kind of have a strategic advantage. And typically, well-defined and defined cultures, characteristics vary with characteristics. Some people are better, some organizations better with results oriented, some are better with communication, some change management. So it's a complex problem. If anything, I would say is that you have to kind of go back to systems theory and so forth, that it's a complex problem, but it's something that's very, very solvable.
Sure, sure. So you said defined versus ill-defined, and it really kind of it reminded me of a couple of things that throughout my career, I had a tendency before, you know, either working for a company or even doing consultancy work for a company, to really look at their core values and their beliefs based on what I was visually seeing with my eyes, because sometimes the perception of what you're seeing versus what you're reading, they kind of offer a contrast between one another. They're opposing. They're not necessarily in alignment. And so as we talk, you know, about cultural and some of those extremities that you've dealt with in the past, how important is it when a company states on paper that, you know, whatever their 10 or 15 or 20 core values are, that they adhere to those values? How important is that?
Well, it's absolutely, I think, the most critical piece that leaders can do to, when they set up your values, that if you set up values that cannot be reached, everybody's going to see that as hypocrisy, and they're going to see a lack of integrity and honesty in that. And let me say this, values, the reason values are so important is values are subjective. People can change their values based on a situation, but beliefs are much harder to change. Oftentimes in organization, people talk about values. They really don't talk about beliefs. You can change a person's value in certain situations, but you're going to have a hard time changing their beliefs. And organizational culture is about what people believe about right and wrong and moral and immoral. What's a good day's work? What's a bad day's work? All those things are beliefs, how they were taught to work, how they were taught to think. These are things that are deeply, deeply embedded in them. And so the issue is, if you put up values that obviously contradict what you believe about that company, you basically set it up for, you know, a great dysfunctional experience. And certainly you're not going to hit your strategic goals, is what I would say. It's all about the strategy for me.
Right. Well, thank you, Frank. We certainly appreciate your insight and wisdom, as well as all of the points that you've made there. Certainly organizational culture is a system of shared assumptions and values and beliefs that help individuals within organizations understand their behavior, whether appropriate or inappropriate. Culture can also be a source of competitive advantage for an organization. You know, like you chimed in on, you said that, you know, if you've got a very strong cultural, you know, sometimes these folks are in alignment with one another versus not being in alignment. You know, and within that strong organization, cultures can be organized as well as being a controlling mechanism for the organization. And I guess finally considered or should I say, finally, organizational culture consists of kind of the assumptions, as you've alluded to, the values. And then I guess a point for me is really the artifacts, because, you know, you're bringing forth a lot of history, like you said, that's been ingrained in different cultures and race when you bring forth this melting pot. And now you have to figure out a way to kind of bring it all together, align it, and allow for it to kind of flourish. You know, it's almost like watering the seed, but certainly you need to understand it. And I think, you know, that would be one of the takeaways that I'm gathering from what you've explained to us today. So are there any other takeaways that you'd like to share with our listening audience there, Frank?
Well, I think what I'd like to share is kind of what you and I've talked about a lot. Maybe a year or two or 3 years ago, people could make a choice. Organization could choose where they want to transform or not transform in a time strain, or we're going to do this, we're going to do that, strategically look at situations. Right now, what's going on in the global marketplace, world, manufacturing, whatever you want to talk about at this point in time, there's no choice any longer. Organizations have got to learn and adapt quickly, and they're going to have to learn how to deal with interventions, how to deal with recovery, and how to be resilient. That is no longer a choice. That's like a requirement, and that's what makes it a whole different game.
Yeah. Well, I couldn't agree with you more, Frank. You know, we worked in the trenches. We've been side by side in trying to move forward in helping some of these organizations during this unprecedented times. And certainly it's heart-wrenching to see what's going on. And obviously, as you've alluded to, culture has a big, big influential aspect to how you move forward. And Frank, basically, we'd like to say thank you very much for being a participant, being a special guest on our podcast. As our audience very well knows, with regards to Cut to the Chase, we're pretty direct, we're pretty straightforward, and I think you've really drove several points to home, which culture is important. You know, you have to look at those assumptions, you have to look at the values, you have to look at the individual beliefs, and you've got to be able to channel all that into the DNA that makes your company viable and have its means to be able to thrive. And so without further ado, we're going to wrap up. And Frank, I'd like to say goodbye to you, and we certainly appreciate it. And to everyone out there, thank you again. This is Gregory Proctor, Cut to the Chase. Have a wonderful day. Be safe out there, and bye-bye.